right now.
This is
2FM's Game On. Big thanks to Demi and Mikey for driving us through the afternoon. It's Monday the 6th of October and you're listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the new music show at 7 o'clock, Alan Cawley and Stephen Kelly are standing by to talk soccer after a very eventful weekend both sides of the Irish Sea.
It most certainly was. And in Gaelic football, Austin O'Malley is in studio to discuss the club season so far. And it wouldn't be Monday without our weekend sporting highlights too. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552, WhatsApp 087 187 9200, or we're on X at Game On 2FM.
This is
2FM's Game On. Now, welcome along. It's great to have a full studio on a Monday, especially after a very busy weekend of sport as well, which means we'll have lots of great sporting highlights. Who wants to kick it off?
Hello,
go with Alan.
Hello,
Alan. Well, Austin.
How are you doing?
Go with Alan so we can have a good slag as well.
Okay, yeah, well, I have two. Before we start, Marie, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Well done, Marie.
Has to be said.
For people who don't know, Woman of the Year. You're always our Woman of the Year, but okay, now the secret is out.
It's not quite the Woman of the Year. It's the news industry.
Well, you're our Woman
of the Goss
of the Year.
Awards. But look, I mean, if you want to call me the Woman of the Year, I'll take it. Look,
well done. Congratulations.
Text in if you've got a problem with it. But yeah, let's go with that.
It's not bad on a Monday evening now.
Yeah, she's in fighting spirits as well. Well done. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So my highlights is Marie Crow. I'm going to start back on Friday night. Two individual performances that were absolutely exceptional over the weekend. And it brings me back to Friday evening because we were down in Cork, Turner's Cross, packed out Turner's Cross. Surprise result, some might say, because they weren't the favourites going into the game because of the position to find themselves in the league. But what a performance Cork City put on, and epitomised by their captain, Sean Maguire. He was absolutely fantastic. An individual performance that it was as good as I've seen in a long, long time, along with the team as well. And he led by example. So that's my first one. And then the big game in the Premier League at the weekend, Chelsea-Liverpool. Caicedo midfield was absolutely superb. And there's all this stuff nowadays in modern day football, as you know, Marie, Austin, where they're pigeonholing players. You're a number 6, you're a number 8, you're a number 10, rather than actually you're a midfielder or you're a forward or you're a defender, like it was in the old school days. And Caicedo is very much an old school midfielder, does a bit of everything, and he covered every blade of grass on Saturday, scored an unbelievable goal, breaking up play, building up attacks, assisting chances. He was absolutely phenomenal. So they're my two highlights, two unbelievable individual performances over the weekend.
They sound fascinating, Alan. It looks like you enjoyed Turner's Cross by the sounds of it as well.
It was brilliant, Ruby. It really was.
Yeah,
and to see the crowd back, like, it's there was a protest before the match. I understand, obviously, the fans are not happy with things down there towards the owner. But I think the owner has got some things right and he's obviously done some things wrong, and that's hence the protest. This will be their second time to be relegated in 3 years. So I can understand the frustrations of the supporters and the fans because it's such a big club. But once that was kind of out of the way, just to see the players perform in the manner that they did, because it's been such a tough season for them. And Gerard Ash, to be fair, the manager who came over and spoke to us before and after, he didn't come across like a man who was dejected and kind of downtrodden. He was full of energy, full of life. So he really believes in what they're trying to do in the project. So it might not be a bad thing, Ruby, for them to be relegated, which is obviously it's going to happen in the league. Build in the first division with what's there now with the
Dundalk
manager.
It's a good comparison as well, isn't it, what they're doing in the first division?
Yeah, next year, they weren't prepared coming into the Premier Division this year, and I think they will have learned a lot from this season, that if they go down and spend the year, as I said, now they have David Myler on board as assistant manager as well. They have Gerard Ash. He was telling us, the manager as well, that they've managed to nail down a lot of players on long-term contracts. So there is scope to build there in the first division and come back much better prepared, because we need a good thriving Cork City in the Premier Division as well. So it was great to see it fall to the rafters. I hope plenty of people come up to the Aviva now and get behind them. They will travel, the Cork City supporters. So it was a brilliant evening and I really enjoyed it, John.
That was a good result for Cork City, of course. Austin, what about your weekend? What was the highlight of the sporting
My highlight, really mix, a good mix of stuff the weekend, I suppose, between the GA and even the pre-dark. Really enjoyed that. But do you know what, which is probably a funny one for me, and I was just saying it to Alan there while we were off air, I went up to Tallaght Stadium yesterday evening just to watch Shamrock Rovers and Kerry FC, and I just thought the game obviously played out and Shamrock Rovers won quite well, but I just thought, just as sheer entertainment and the value that I got from going to that game last night, just from a sensory perspective in terms of going in, the crowd. I thought the Kerry FC fans that travelled were an absolute credit to their club. I know they're a club that are in their infancy and they're building, and they're, you know, they had a brilliant, brilliant win to get them there. But I thought they were fantastic throughout. Obviously, there was a bit of a mismatch in quality in terms of the two teams, but I just thought overall it was a brilliant evening. I was never at a cup game before, and so, you know, the FAI. So I just walked away and thought, wow. And I suppose the playlist before the game, I thought it was incredible. I was saying, I need to find this man that has this playlist. So I was thinking of Paul Corrie might be a way in for me there. I know he's up and down there a lot, but it was brilliant, and brilliant atmosphere, a lot of kids.
And my son was in there, and he was in with the Kerry fans because of the Kerry connection. So he'd be a big supporter of Kerry FC and have the jerseys and all the rest. But he went in, and he was shouting for Kerry, and they lost, obviously. But he said it was the most fun he'd had at a match in
1200 travel,
yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I thought it was just, yeah. And even as I said, the build up and just the
and when they scored, he said they went absolutely wild.
Bananas, yeah. And like their chance all the way throughout, and like they really, really backed their team.
Loads of them as well. It was great from the club. They organised, they had everything, kind of all their ducks in a row, and they brought up so many supporters. And I was probably late for them getting home, but I'd say they had a lot of crack.
Yeah, and I thought it was really well organised. Even like I went up, and like I hadn't been up there before, and I just thought it was really well organised. Entrance, exit, you know, catering, the whole thing. So it was a really, really rich evening.
So Ruby, we've three quarters of the team converted. You're the last one.
No,
you need to join us at a League of Ireland game.
I didn't see that one coming from Aston O'Malley, I must say.
Well, there you go now.
Yeah. And even you were, because from a coaching perspective as well, I know that you were able to get takeaways from that, watching the way the different teams set up, and just been able to find little nuggets of information that help you as a coach.
Yeah, no, 100%. And that's what I suppose since I stepped out of coaching this year, taking a break, I've tried to get around to, I suppose, all different kind of events and bits and pieces like that. Because I do think you can learn loads from different games and that. And just saying to Alan off air, even watching Shamrock Rovers, their build-up play, like I just, you know, they were kind of a lot of it going down the right-hand side there, and I was, you know, probably walking away thinking, God, you know, if you're set up tactically to take them on, is there something in that, or is it that they didn't have an awful lot of players, you know, that are comfortable on their left and so on? So you're always looking at stuff, and it's, you're always learning. So it was a great experience for me as well, and it's one of the reasons I probably went up. You know,
yeah,
well,
it was good
to watch. How about you, Marie?
So mine is, I suppose I'll have to give it a bit of context before I explain it. So the Clare Hurling final, which was on yesterday in Ennis, had two unfamiliar foes. So it was a very novel pairing, Airog and Clooney Quinn. So Airog from Ennis, they're the townies. They won the county final 17 points to 12, and they bridged a 35-year gap in that. And by doing it, they became the 12th different winner of the Canon Hamilton, which is the county final winning trophy, in a span of 22 years. So for me, it's a highlight to see that there's so much competition in the county, that there's a spread. You go into starting a championship and anybody can win. Like, it's, there's different teams coming through all the time, like bridging gaps, very little consistency. And if you're a sports fan, that's what you want. You want unpredictability. You look at other counties, Derry Hurling is one where you've got a lot of predictability. Waterford, the same thing. So to see Clare deliver so many different winners is brilliant. It keeps it entertaining, but it also, when you look at the county team, when they're lining out for championship games, you're seeing a huge amount of different clubs represented as well in the Clare team. And I just think it, hurling's in a very healthy place when you have lots of different winners and players coming from lots of different clubs as well.
Very good.
Clooney Quinn, they're a relatively new club, are they? That's,
no, they've been around for a while, but they haven't always been a dominant club, but they've really got their act together. Fergal Lynch, who's a former Clare hurler, is from there. He's the principal of the school down there, and he's done absolutely fantastic work with the underage and in the school as well. I don't know if many of our listeners remember, but there was a viral video that went around about a wall ball competition in the school. So he's regularly has these competitions where you'd have pretty much the whole school out watching kids doing their wall ball competition. So he really encourages a massive amount of hurling. So he's done great work, and there's really good people there. But it wasn't always the best club, but they're coming good now again. And Airog, they're in the football final as well. They're one of these clubs again. They go through peaks and troughs. There's lots of competition in the town as well. Like, there's a rugby club there and a soccer club, so they do have to fight for the kids there, but like they're doing great work as well. Shane O'Donnell plays for them, and I think when you have someone like Shane O'Donnell in your team as well, it's easy enough to inspire the kids. But yeah, it's good to see different teams.
Very interesting. There was an interesting week all around. I was in Paris for the weekend, so my...
Oh yeah, of course you were. Clooney, Quinn, Ennis, Paris.
Good old Tala. Paris.
Good old Tala, yeah, I was in Paris. I was in Longchamp yesterday for the Prix de l'Arc, which was lovely. And it was a great race. Darius obviously won. Mini Hawk was second, who I thought would win. And I think Christophe Soumian wouldn't mind another go on Mini Hawk. If I'm brutally honest, I'd say he was in front plenty soon enough on her. But my highlight was actually the next race, the Prix de l'Opera, Barnavara. Shane Foley rode Barnavara for Jessica Harrington, and I thought he was brilliant on her. I love seeing people win on horses that probably shouldn't have won, and his timing was exceptional. He turned in front to have the courage not to commit, to wait for 100 metres before he pressed the button, and Barnavara quickened, and she just hung on from Seed of Fire, who was closing her down all the way to the line. She won a short neck, but I thought it was a brilliant piece of riding on the biggest stage, and I thought it was excellent to watch.
Were you there as a working capacity, or did you just
I
go
was doing
for
a little bit of work.
Paris?
No, I didn't go for a jaunt, Marie. I was doing a bit of work. That's my sport. My personal highlight was my daughter finishing second at Osborne Horse Trials, where I had been prior to that. But that's a personal
tell
highlight.
Tell us a bit more about that.
No, Isabel was second in the International Pony Class yesterday in Osborne, so she finished on her dressage score. So it was dressage Friday, cross country Saturday, show jumps yesterday. And she finished on her dressage score and finished second behind a British pony who was a silver medalist at the European Championships.
Oh, lovely.
What was the famous commentary years ago? Remember the name. Should we be watching out for Isabel Walsh?
Oh, no, she likes it. And fair play to her. It was her last going pony, so... Brilliant.
We were all back here battling the weather conditions, hoping that matches were going to get on. A few of them did, but it's grim enough stuff when the weather hits.
Wild, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it's really frustrating then because in Dublin in particular, a lot of games are played in parks, and the minute the weather gets bad, the parks are closed. So you could go for weeks on end without any matches.
I think they can be a bit premature too with the decisions. And yeah. I know it's health and safety thing, but like there was even talk of us on Thursday that were already planning the game to be called off Friday night in Turner's Cross. And I know you have to make contingency plans and stuff. But we went down Friday evening, it was lovely. Turner's Cross, bathing in the evening air we were. It was Sunny absolutely sense. Gorgeous.
Alan, it is the last weekend before the budget, so we could be all changing the narrative around football academies on Tuesday when it's announced whether or not they are awarded the funding that they're looking for. They're hoping for about 4 million on Tuesday. Shane Robinson, who's now the technical director of the FAI, was out speaking to Darren Farrell today, and he was out doing a little bit of other media as well. So they're very much coming out fighting and in force. And listen to Shane this morning speaking to Darren on Morning Ireland, it does sound like they're confident, and he was very clear as well that this funding that they hope to get on Tuesday isn't funding for the FAI, it's funding for communities, it's funding for children, it's funding for clubs, it's funding for development, it's funding that will hopefully get us memories again like Italia 90, like USA 94, and it's funding for the young kids who dream of being footballers.
And it's so badly needed, Marie. That's the crux of it, to be honest with you. And that's why you have Shane out kind of almost pleading at this stage. But it can't go unnoticed this time by government. And I think, to be fair, the message has been landing on the door over the last probably 6 to 8 months, all because of the negative kind of narrative around the international team, if you like. And the message that's coming from that is it's going to get a whole lot worse unless things can be improved here in terms of grassroots and academy level and community fund and all that kind of thing that you just outlined, Marie. But it's imperative that the money, and to be fair, they've been tight-lipped. I've been asking people all around the weekend. There's no indications whatsoever whether it will be that we will get something, but I just have a good feeling that we will because of the desperate nature of what's needed. Yeah. And as I said,
and also Alan, because of the work that Will Clark and Shane Robinson done, and they were asked to do certain things. They were asked to get an audit done. They did that on time. They've been able to present what is needed, where it's needed, why it's needed. And also I think when you look at our national team too, and the fact that things are so grim that it's very hard to argue with the fact that football doesn't need development in this country.
Well, that's the crux of it, Marie, because you have a case where even the likes of Will and Shane, and there's a lot of negativity around the FAI, and we'll often be critical of them, and rightly so in a lot of instances. But what people sometimes forget is when you are being negative around the FAI, there's a lot of good people in the FAI as well. And mm-hmm. since the likes of Will has gone in, Shane, different people, John Martin has gone in now, there's lots of lads I would know who their heart to be in the right place. You see the way the League of Ireland is thriving over the last wee while as well. But it needs help. We need help badly. And hopefully the help will be forthcoming tomorrow when the budget is announced, because it is. It's absolutely in desperate need. Like, as much as we're saying things are good, we're still a million miles off where we need to be, Marie. So there has to be a starting point. And tomorrow, I would hope to God that it is the starting point in terms of this. Because it's not a sports grant. It's investment into the future of what we could eventually kind of become. We already see two teams qualifying for, and the leagues have done brilliant, the clubs have done brilliant, so have the underage setups in those clubs, but they're working off scraps, and that's the problem for them. And if we're ever going to create an industry like the one that we always kind of envisage and the one that we should have, this is the starting point in terms of the investment going into it. For the likes of even Austin going up, seeing
maybe we might even go.
Well, we should have stadiums like that.
But if Pascal Donoghue, and in the budget, ring fences 4 million for capital spending on the infrastructure at grassroots level for soccer, who can guarantee that it goes there? Well, who is in charge over there that can say, this goes here and look at where it's spent? I mean, you're comparing it to the UK. I mean, I don't think the British government funds the academies in any of the clubs in the UK.
No, but that's because of the money to get from the TV money. It's no needed, and they've been building an industry for a number of years.
So if we do it here, is this an FAI academy, or do you give money to the Irish clubs to create academies? How do you do it, and how do you make sure the money is spent the right way?
See, obviously, in an ideal world, the clubs would be self-sustainable, but because, and it would be covered, if there was investment or money needed for clubs over the years, if there was, a sustainable industry, the governing body would have been providing. But because the governing body has been in such a mess over the last number of years, Ruby, that's why we're going cap in hand to the government. It's government that's the only ones that can kind of provide this money for us. The governing body can't. And they've basically admitted that at this stage because of the financial peril that they've been in over the last number of years. That's when you have the likes of Will or people involved in academy structures, when they do go looking for money off the government, already there's a negative connotation around it because of the financial situation that they find themselves in, that they've been bailed out previously. So now you have a situation where we're almost trying to separate it from not League of Ireland or not Irish football, that it's actually academy structures for kids. This is for kids and for the future of the game. And if this money is not forthcoming, believe me, the stuff that you've seen in Armenia a few weeks ago, or the stuff, the bad results, or us not qualifying for tournaments, it's only going to get a whole lot worse. So that's why it's imperative that this is provided tomorrow. And I think the message is finally landing because of the good cases that's been put forward by the boys. And to answer your one, Ruby, I think the clubs finally get it, that it has to be ring-fenced towards the academy. Years ago, there would have been stuff where it would have been all about the first team, money going towards wages. Them days are gone now. The clubs realise themselves that because of the academy structures in the club and the teams that they have now, having to look after 3, 4, 5 teams, the money will go towards that, I've no doubt about it.
And the other big plan that they have, like, they're hoping that the funding will increase over time as they prove themselves and as that trust starts to grow, and they want to create jobs, because we have so few paid coaches. We do not have qualified people who are developing.
The stats are frightening.
They want to create an industry where they have jobs for coaches, where they have development officers. They actually have a functioning industry where they're developing players, like some of the Mason Melias who've been sold now for big money. And that money then is going back into the club. So it's about creating a self-sustaining industry, because at the moment there's nothing really.
No, and what we have, like, we've one example to point to, Mason Melia, the young fella that just went to Arsenal, Victor, at the moment. But we should have 10 Mason Melias or 15 or 20. You shouldn't be saying, oh, we've won. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's in terms
of...
Well, they're
the exception, aren't they?
But that's what I'm saying. It should be the norm, but they're the exception because we don't have the industry, Marie. And that's what we're all crying and fighting for. And everybody loves football. Everybody wants to see the international team do well. Everybody wants to see them on the global stage, whether it's European Championships, World Cups, whatever the case may be. That's what we all want. But it has to start somewhere. And hopefully, as I said, there's good work being done already by the clubs. And I know a couple of the lads who are looking after directors of football in different clubs around the place and doing great work. But they're doing it out of just
volunteers
still. It shouldn't be the case if we're ever going to get it to an elite level.
Do you think, Alan, is that the low-hanging fruit, so that in terms of that, that's where that money should go in terms of coaching.
100% Austin,
That's the quickest and most impactful.
Yeah, and this isn't even a case of, say, years ago when you might have been on roaring and shouting about stuff, oh, just give us money, give us money. There's data and research to back all this up.
And there's going to be accountability.
The presentation that the lads put forward to government as well is probably the most slickest professional presentation that's ever been put forward in terms of Irish football. So it's been backed up by stats, by data, by all the research comparing us, and we're not comparing them to England, England, Italy, France, the top leagues. We're being compared with the countries who are languishing down, and that's where we are.
50 plus,
yeah, horrendous. Like, you know, there was a brilliant audit carried out by all the clubs over the last few weeks. There was follows up with that last week where Will put on kind of conferences in the Aviv and different things for all the clubs. So there's good work being done, Austin, and I'd be the first to criticise stuff that goes on in the FAI. You have to point out when there's good stuff going on as well, and I know these people involved and the work that's being done, but they need help. They need help. There's only so much, and if this help is not forthcoming, and like when we think about it, 4 million, 8 million, it's not like, when you think of the money that's in the country and the benefit that this will bring, like, it's not big money. It should be a no-brainer.
Well, we happen to have an Irish footballer who did play in the Premier League at a time when there was lots of players playing in the Premier League, and Stephen Kelly is with us now. Stephen, who would have thought that when you were playing that there would be such a dearth then in the years post of seeing anybody really at that level? We've so few players, but it was much more regular when you were there. What would you put it down to, the fact that you made it at that level?
That was way too
from a young
question.
Age. Yeah. Now, if in young age, I think we were, everybody was dead certain on Irish football because of what happened in the past, because of the 1990s, because of the 94s, because of that, there was an influence of people playing it. So the league was huge. Then there was a direct line of sight across to England, which was the best way to go and play and make a career for yourself at the highest level. I know you could come back and play League of Ireland. But then also, there's been a massive, massive infrastructure. And I know people hate banging on about this, but the investment in GAA since I've left to go to the Ireland, or to the UK, is insane and comparison to football. So you're talking about direct conflict of interest when it comes to playing football and the infrastructure they've been able to put in place. Like when I was playing football, everybody I knew, every friend of mine from school, we played football and we played Gaelic as on the side. Now it's almost the opposite. The GAA have gone into schools, they've gone a bit, so that's a difficult thing because the investment's not there. So Alan's right in what you're saying. If you can get an investment into the grassroots and put the infrastructure in place, but then it's like almost like the boy who cried wolf with the FAI. They're afraid to almost give the money because it's been so badly handled over the last few years, over the last decades. It's gone to the wrong people. It's gone to the wrong pockets. It's not gone directly into development. And, you know, that's where the government have to get some trust back in the people that are running the show.
Has rugby gone professional in that time as well? Also done huge damage to soccer.
I'd say it has impacted it, definitely, but less so than GAA, I'd say, just because even though there's a crossover within the sports, there's less of a crossover in rugby when it comes to just physicality. And school-wise, like, I still think a majority of the rugby team comes from private school education, whereas that's not the case for football. It's very different. It's more of a something for all. I don't want to just label that's what rugby is, but a lot of go through the Black Rocks and the Belvederes and those clubs, that's where it's bred. Whereas when you think of football, it's just out on the streets, your Tucker Overs, your home farms. That's where it used to be from the lifeblood of communities. It was very different, and it was a sport for everybody. And I just think there's been a lack of investment in that sport from a young age. And it's when we went abroad, when we went, there was money coming back for us. Like a lot of clubs we played for would have got funding. Al, you noticed the money area local clubs probably would have got, but where did it go to, and was it put back in the right areas? You know, where was it drifting out of game? And I think that was probably what was happening through all that kind of time when there was so many of us going abroad and making our debuts and going on to play Premier League football. It wasn't going back into where it needed to go. It was going off in different directions.
As much as rugby, you can point to the GAA and you can point to rugby, I would actually applaud those organisations because they had their house in order and they were getting things right and pushing on. The FAI had the opportunities to do that off the back of 1990, 1994, all the major tournaments when things were great, and it was never capitalised on. Never. So I wouldn't, as much as you say there's competition in terms of players playing GAA or players playing rugby that we might lose out on, in terms of the organisations and the IRFU and pushing on and being more professional, I would applaud them because the FAI as we all know, has been so dysfunctional for so many years, and that's a problem that we have now. That's the reason we find ourselves in the situation where we are now, where Irish football was neglected for years and years and years. We were all involved in it, we seen it, what was going on, and that's why the chickens have come home to roost, and here we are now in the situation going cap in hand to try. Because once Brexit kicked in as well, it was easy to hand over our players of 15, 16, and we were all part of it, went to England, which was great. But in terms of the development of players, once Brexit kicked in, we weren't ready for it. We don't have the infrastructure for it. It was landed on our doorstep, and that's why the clubs now are trying their best to gather things together, because there was nothing ready in terms of that.
Well, hopefully tomorrow now when the budget comes out will be a day for celebration and a day for new beginnings where lessons will be learned and everything will push forward. We'll be keeping an eye on that. I'm sure Ruby and Shane will be talking about it tomorrow night. We're going to take a very quick break. Do stay with us though, because ironically we'll be talking about the Premier League after these.
This is 2FM's Game On.
Now, welcome back. Alan Cawley is with us to talk football. Stephen Kelly's on the line. Austin O'Malley is listening in as well. And Ruby's here too. So we have lots of voices, lots of things to talk about. We've already gone through what we're hoping for from the budget, so that we will eventually get some more players, more Irish players playing in the Premier League. We did have a few though, so at least we can tune into some games and see some Irish players playing in the Premier League. But the storylines this weekend were very much not about the Irish players, but more about, will we start with Liverpool, Alan, and the fact that they lost to Chelsea. The wheels are starting to come off for Arne Slot, three losses now, and doesn't seem to be getting the best out of his team. Where do they go from here? 2-0, 2-1 loss to Chelsea.
I think the international break has come just at the right time for them, just to reset and regroup, because it has been a tough week, three defeats in a row, Marie, and Chelsea were good value for the win as well. I thought Chelsea were brilliant on the night. They played really, really well. I've already spoken about Caicedo, but the little lad that came on, Estevao, got the winner, was absolutely brilliant. The impact he had also. But I just thought, and it's kind of, we've seen this over the past week with Liverpool, and people are speaking about transition. It's not so much transition. They won the league last year, so it can't be a transition. It's just the fact that they've brought in, obviously, the new players who were just trying to find their way in the team, and also the players that are there trying to adjust to them as well. And he's having a major problem in trying to adjust them, particularly everybody speaking about Wirtz, and people point to the money straight away in terms of, I suppose, the fee that he cost. Isak as well, massive fee, but he'll get up and running, Isak. I've no doubt about that. Like, you're asking the question, where do they go from here, Marie? I have no real worries in terms of the future for Liverpool. It's a little bit of a mini crisis at the moment, but no more than that. And once these lads get up to speed, I think they will do well. There's big problems defensively, that's the one. I think the attacking players will be fine. Konate was a bit of a problem for them last year. He hasn't started all that great. And the two fullbacks, everybody, and we ourselves here, we used to speak about it weekly, Trent being poor defensively, they actually miss him over offensively, building up as well, and him on the ball, and the lads that have come in just haven't hit the ground running at all in terms of Kirkez. Frimpong hasn't played much, but Conor Bradley has struggled as well. So I think they're the biggest issues to have. The goalkeeper's out injured at the moment as well. I wouldn't be pinning too much on Mamardashvili. I think Liverpool will be fine, Marie, but it is a bit of a mini crisis at the moment for them.
Stephen, they did get played off the park. Will it be just as easy as the break and sorting out a defender or two, or are Liverpool in a bit of butter?
I don't think it's gonna be. I don't think it's gonna be a crazy thing for Liverpool where they struggle to get back into form. I think at some point it will click. I think there's been a little build up of this. They've not been playing wonderful football, but they're still getting the results. And I kind of every kind of thought maybe it might just come around where it just clicks and then they start winning comfortably. Defensively, there is issues there, and for. I think he's going to go back to the midfield three they had from last season. I know Wirtz is such a big money sign, and he is a wonderful player, but to get to some stability, I think getting back to Szoboszlai, Gravenberg and McAllister in there will just give them that little bit of, I know, resilience in the middle of the park that I think they've been lacking. Get, you know, Salah dropping off form is huge as well, and then getting Isak back up and running. But, you know, Alan's touched on it with the fullbacks. Trent is huge offensively. Like, you can't underestimate how good he was in the ball. He's one of the best passer balls I think I've ever seen, like, in football. And then you have Kirkez on the left hand side, who last year I've seen him on numerous occasions, and every time I see him he's probably the best player on the pitch. So I don't think he's just taking a bit of time to adjust, but I think when he gets going he can be excellent for them.
I think as well, lads, it's probably worth pointing out that they went through something really difficult personally as well as a team. To lose for many of them their best 100%. Friend, and every time they're taken to the pitch and Diogo Jota isn't there, it must be really hard for them. And I think we probably forget that they're human beings and they're grieving as well.
Yeah, you'd think that they probably have that period to work through that, like, and there's a lot in that, and I'm sure they're dealing with that internally in the club. But I suppose you need to be cognizant of that when you think of results, and it mightn't be the immediacy, but it might be bearing its head now in terms of just that connection piece between the squad and them feeling that you know that they've dealt with it.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Marie, and it's something that probably hasn't been spoken about because it's fairly sensitive. So I definitely think that's a factor as well in terms of the manager having to deal with that, not only personally because he would have managed the player, but then you're having to manage how everybody else feels as well, almost, you know. So it's very, very difficult. We saw that opening night with Salah, how emotional he was as well. But just in terms of the football side of things, yeah, there is a few issues at the moment that he needs to iron out. I think they will get them out. I didn't see the immediacy in going out spending like nearly, 200-300 million on these forward players. Like, they weren't, like, they won the league last year. I don't think they needed to go out. And people say, yeah, like, you're strengthening from a position of power. I think one or two might have been fine, but they brought in a lot. Like, they did a lot of spending. And I know they didn't spend that much in the past couple of years, so they did it kind of all in one go almost. But you think of Ekitike as well, how he feels, Isak coming in. Like, one of them was the priority because the Isak one went on and on and on, then they probably still went after him. So how does he feel, Ekitike? So there's a few things for the manager to iron out at the moment. But as I said, brilliant players, they'll get it sorted. But at the moment, you have Arsenal who are kind of gone top now. I've tipped Arsenal to win the league.
Again.
They'll win it this year. This is the year. If they don't win it this year, well, then I'm giving up. But I do think they will. But I think Liverpool will be fine, but they just have things to iron out at the moment.
Arsenal were way too good for West Ham, Stephen. But it was kind of a mundane game to watch.
Yeah, did we expect anything else from an Arsenal win? I think they're comfortable. Going forward, they look excellent. I think every time I watch Declan Rice, it just annoys me. He doesn't play for Ireland because I like him more and more every time I see him. He's so consistent, and it's not consistent like a 5 or a 6. It's like an 8 every single week. Like he just seems to be able to do everything in the game. Popped up with a goal again against his former team, but that wasn't even the pinnacle. It was just the simple things he does so well for that side, moving the ball. And then you think in the forward areas, he's got Saka back up and running, looking really good. Martinelli, who looks so much better than he has done. Odegaard, who I felt maybe pushed out aside with Eze coming in, looks like he's hit a vein of form as well. So yeah, they're very, very good, Arsenal. They're you know, I think Colin may be right, which it pains me to say, but I think he may be right.
Maybe right. It's a long way to go, yeah. I'm not going to give you too much credit just yet. Spurs are sat third. I think they were lucky, Stephen, to beat Leeds.
Yeah, I thought Leeds did really well. That was the first time Leeds have lost at home for over a year, which is, I know a lot of that was in the Championship, but still it's some record to have at Elland Road. So they've not given up many goals at that place, and they've just been so good. Daniel Farke has done so well there. But yeah, Tottenham came in the end, I think, lucky.
We've lost Stephen there. We'll have to get him back in a minute. Well, it's good that we're talking about Leeds, Al.
Yeah, he's had a great start, Thomas Frank. It was a tough game. Elland Road, to be fair to Leeds, they've had a good start to the campaign as well. So I think for Spurs to go away from home and beat Leeds because of how well they've done, and it's such a tough place to go, Elland Road, as well. I think that was a great victory for Spurs. 7 games in, 14 points, only 2 off Arsenal. Question is, can they maintain that? I don't think they'll be title challengers, but if they were to finish in the top 4, I'm jumping ahead of myself now, but if they were to finish in the top 4, it would be phenomenal. But in terms of a start, a new manager coming in, it's been brilliant from Frank.
I should have actually thrown Jack Grealish's 93rd minute winner in as one of my highlights because it was just brilliant for him. He's becoming a bit of a cult hero already in Everton, and the fact as well that they ended Crystal Palace's club record 19 match unbeaten run. But his interview afterwards, Alan, brilliant. Was amazing because he was talking about how badly he wanted it to happen, how he wanted to get a goal, and he'd been talking about the different games when he'd been in a position and then he hadn't managed to score the goal. But you could just tell how much it means to him now to actually be able to, I guess, be himself, be that free spirit and deliver for Everton.
Yeah, I love Grealish, Marie, because he's a throwback. Like, when in a game that's so sanitised now and the players are so robotic and Everything is watched. He's, as I said, a throwback that he's just a normal lad. You hear him interviewed after the match. He's absolutely brilliant. And to see him back playing, he's too good to be stuck on Man City's sidelines. They're a brilliant team with brilliant players, absolutely. But he's far too good to be sitting on the sidelines. And in a club like Everton, suits him down to the ground where, as you said, he can be a free spirit, the superstar player, the hero, if you like. He is a relatability straight away with the fans and everybody, a normal working class lad. He's absolutely brilliant. And even in the interview, I loved it afterwards, where he got man of the match, and he says, "I'm looking down there, I think that's the man of the match trophy, but I shouldn't be getting that." He actually said the lad on the other team, Adam Wharton, was brilliant, and he says he should be getting that. He was the best player on the pitch. He also spoke about, "I was watching Monday Night Football the other night," so players watch everything as well.
Yeah.
He says, "I was watching Monday Night Football," and this was an interview with Jamie Carragher. He says, "I was watching you Monday night, and I think it was you or Duncan Ferguson said I don't take enough shots." So he says, "I need to start getting more shots in the game and all." So he's just a really likable young lad, and to see him back playing with a brilliant club, the stadium as well, Everton, you look at the new stadium and there's a lot of talk around clubs that you're trying to progress things forward, move things on, but sometimes you lose the soul of the club when you go to a new stadium. They've hit the ground running in their new stadium. It looks fantastic, and they've had a good start to the season, Everton as well.
Yeah, the stadium, Stephen, is definitely worth mentioning, because the way that they have built it, they have definitely put so much thought into making it a fortress, because the sound in the stadium is phenomenal. The steepness of the stands, they really have used it to their advantage. And even if you compare it to maybe West Ham and how much it's lacking there, and you can see what Everton, because when Grealish scored that goal, the noise was just phenomenal. Yeah. How much of a benefit? And have you been actually?
I actually haven't been yet. It's one of the ones I haven't been this season. I'm actually dying to go. But the acoustics are amazing. They've created that kind of the real steepness, so it just reverberates back in. But I think they're taking a really good care about the stadiums. They're not just going for a soulless bowl that evaporates the atmosphere. I think Tottenham, when they did theirs, that was a real thought process to get that kind of, still keep the atmosphere there, still feel like you're in a White Hart Lane, but in a much vaster environment with a better surrounding. I think Everton have captured that. I think they've been able to move the atmosphere of Goodison to a much better stadium, much more for the club financially going forward. If they can host other events, it becomes a money spinner, and I think it has to be multifaceted, I think, for all these clubs, because the amount of money they're spending on players and wages and everything, the stadium has to be, generate revenue for them, and this is what it will do, and it is. It looks pretty special. I'm excited to go.
Al, every year there's a bolter as such of a club in the Premier League. Is that going to be Bournemouth this year? It was Forest last year. Obviously, Leicester won a title a couple of years ago, but Bournemouth are absolutely bombing this year.
Yeah, brilliant manager Ruby as well. When you think he came in under a bit of a cloud, because Gary O'Neill had done so well and people were saying they shouldn't have sacked him, and this was an unknown lad, Iriola, but he was phenomenal last year as well. And also on the way to play, like, there's a real kind of, everything is so kind of scrutinised now in terms of data and research, and it's all about possession-based games in a lot of instances. But these play a possession-based game, but they're so direct and progressive in how to get at teams and hitting teams on their counter-attacks. Semenyo has been a star as well for them. So they've been absolutely brilliant. And you're thinking of, I suppose, some of the clubs that might be struggling with managers, United and the like, he must be in line, I'd say. The likes of himself and Glasner are putting themselves in a great position for any big job that comes up. But whilst he's not even focused on stuff like that, he's just doing his job at Bournemouth. And when you think as well, Ruby, I watched a lad playing in the Champions League last week, Huijsen for Real Madrid, who's going to be an absolute star, by the way. He's phenomenal, Huijsen. And to lose him, and he also lost Zabarni, who went to PSG. So it just kind of tells you the level they were playing at last year, when their two centre halves were picked up by two of the biggest clubs in the world. They lost Kerkez to Liverpool, who was their left full. So there's three of their back four going to three of the biggest clubs in the world. And yet he was still managed to maintain the level that they were at last year by bringing in new lads in terms of recruitment as well. He's done an unbelievable job, Iriola.
There might be a job going to Nottingham Forest, Stephen, way things are going. And Postecoglou losing 2-0 to Newcastle. He's still quite defiant, but it doesn't bode well, does it?
No, he's always defiant. He called his best mate. I think he's always defiant, but he's not. I think he's struggling. He really is. I never understood how that was a good fit. I look at the way Forest played under Nuno, and you're going, like, they're solid, they counterattack. Ange wants to play the complete opposite. He wants it to be not solid and play possession-based football in the other half of the team and then get done on the counter-attack. And Forest weren't set up for that at all. They had players in the wide areas. They had Gibbs-White get on the ball. and he's gone in there. And I think if Ange came into your side and you're Forest and you just almost pushed for Champions League and you've gone for Nuno and him coming in, getting a team basically near relegation. I know they won a trophy, but you're not going to be enamoured by how he's done and what you think. He's not going to walk in the door and get your respect straight away, I don't think, as a player, because you're feeling like he almost got these. Like, look at the amount of goals they conceded. We were a solid side last year. Is he going to rip that apart and go a new way? So yeah, I think it's. I can't see Marinakis keeping him there. I don't think he's someone that holds fire when it comes to managers. And I'd be surprised if he doesn't turn around very quickly that he's still there.
He's lost 30 of his last 49 Premier League games. Like, it's horrendous when you look at the stats. And everybody knew this. Like, we all knew this in terms of last year, how bad Spurs were. He walks into, he could have no excuses. You're saying there he's defiant, and I see him arguing with journalists, Marie, and talking about, oh, why can't things be difficult, and I turned him around.
Yeah.
He walked into a brilliant group of players and a good club. It wasn't difficult. He's made things more difficult. It's mind-boggling. And you look at Russell Martin, you look at managers who failed yet to still get these jobs. It baffles me.
It does. I'd say it baffles more than you, Al. Don't worry. What about West Ham, Burnley and Wolves, Stephen? Did they look to be struggling? And Burnley were really poor at the weekend.
Yeah, Burnley were poor. I thought Burnley would, like, they've done okay since they've been up, and I thought that defensive solidity that they had, like, they only conceded, it was less than 10 goals, I think, the championship last year, which was insane. They were unbelievable defensively. I thought that would give them a great base to go from, but I just don't think they have the quality on the side, and I think that's what's going to come down to. I just don't think they have enough very good players, and they haven't recruited well enough to be able to sustain that level in the Premier League. I thought they struggled, and I think that West Ham and themselves are be my tips to be honest, even though it's this early on, to be like, go down.
Yeah, they look pretty weak. What about City, Al? Is Haaland going to drag them back to being title contenders?
Yeah, he's brilliant, Haaland, isn't he? He's an absolute monster. And again, like something like with Grealish, young lad, enjoying his football, kind of, there's never any trouble, hassle with him. He's just out there doing his thing. And his goal record is absolutely phenomenal. And it was good to see, I think they pointed out in commentary yesterday, it's a goal, I think Jamie Carragher was saying, it's a goal you'd like to see Man City score more often, because you have the power of Haaland, that they can flick balls down the side or over the top and let him overpower centre-halves as well, like he did yesterday. But the start he's had to the season, I think that's his 9th Premier League goal already. He's 14-15 in all competitions. So he's had an unbelievable start. And yeah, if he maintains this form, Ruby, I thought at the start of the season it would be Arsenal-Liverpool, and I still kind of think that. But if he maintains this form, I would start putting Man City into the mix as well.
Just hope for Rodri that he is okay. He went off early yesterday, Stephen, and you just hate to see a player like that look like he could be in trouble again.
Yeah, it is. And a couple of weeks ago, Pep came out with quotes saying that he had an issue with his knee, the same knee that he had the cruciate ligament damage on. But then he played the following week, and I was like, oh, that was interesting that he said that, and he still played. So I hope for their sake and for football's sake that it's nothing too serious and they can get back for it. But it takes a look at Van Dijk. It took him, how long did it take Van Dijk to get back to the levels? And I don't think he ever got back to the exact levels he was before he was injured, but get back to that level, it's so hard. Like, you're talking playing for 6 months before you get anywhere near where you were, I think, at least after an injury like that.
What age is Rodri?
27, is he? 28?
I would have thought that, yeah. 28 I had in my head.
Mm. Yeah, when you get an injury, a cruciate injury at that age, you're never going to be the same, have the same speed. No, I don't know. Austin, what do you think? I know I use static, different person, but injuries slow you down.
They do, definitely. I suppose they blunt you, and like, you lose probably a season, or you know, that you're out of the game in terms of physically. I know you're rehabbing, you know, the musculoskeletal side of what you're recovering from and that, but you do obviously lose a season. I know the sports science has got so good now that players are returning, but I think that initial season after, or a season or two after, even from a psychological perspective, I think you're blunted a little bit till you work through that as well.
I would say yeah too. And Al, what about United then? 2-0 winners against Sunderland. imagine United fans, we think it's great when you beat Sunderland.
What's all this fuss about, Ruby? What's all this fuss about? Ruben Amorim.
We're back.
Ruben's in control.
Ruben's at the wheel.
The only problem for Ruben is, if you look at the next few games that they have, and of Liverpool after this is just prolonging the inevitable, Ruby. I was actually very disappointed. Fair play, United won, but I was very disappointed with Sunderland because we're speaking there about the teams who've come up, Leeds, Burnley, and Sunderland are one of the ones that have done really, really well. I thought they'd go to Old Trafford and give a good account of themselves, but they kind of rolled over against a fragile Manchester United. So it was disappointing from their point of view, but a good win for United, but... What more can I say?
Yeah, what could happen next?
Well, if you're asking, has things turned around off the back of a 1-0 win against, or 2-0 win against Sunderland? No chance. And if Liverpool, as I said, after the international break as well.
That'll be some game for Liverpool to come back to, won't it?
Okay, lads, we're going to leave the Premier League there. Stephen Kelly, thank you so much for all of that. Alan Colley, sure you may as well hang around for the Gaelic football. We know you're a bit of a connoisseur when it comes to other sports as well. A very quick break. Austin O'Malley is standing by then to talk us through where we're at with the club championship.
This is 2FM's Game On.
Now, welcome back. We're turning our attention to Gaelic games. Austin O'Malley is still with us here in studio. I think if you're a Coola fan, it might be time to switch off the radio. Major disappointment for them yesterday, Austin. The team that you managed the All-Ireland club title are now no longer in the club championship. Lost to Ballyboden in a very dramatic game. After being in control for most of it, they allowed Ballyboden to come back and snatch victory at the death.
Yeah, look, a tough evening in Parnell Park, without a doubt. I suppose had put themselves in a really, really solid position in terms of, I suppose, going into that last kind of final stretch. There was 5 or 6 minutes to go and they were seven up, but full credit to Ballyboden. You know, they had such spirit and character to dig that out, and I suppose none more so than young Sweeney, who ended up with 2-8 on the evening. So it was incredible, even, you know, his last brace and the final goal in extra time just literally broke Coola hearts. But you know, Ballyboden have showed great form all year. They've been brilliant in the league. They obviously won the league and they were quite strong throughout, and they've enough of a number of guys returning back as well. So yeah, it was a very, very tough loss for Coola, and probably one that they would have felt maybe that they should have closed it out given what they had. But as I said, full credit to Ballyboden. They showed such character there, and they literally just dug in and found a way, and they kept, you know, putting runners forward, and they pinched those couple of scores and used their bench really well as well. So yeah, it was a titanic struggle.
A titanic battle it was, and they will face Nafina, who beat Kilmacud Crokes. Call that one, Ballyboden or Nafina.
And Nafina, the All-Ireland hurling champions. They're doing,
absolutely. They could potentially, be going for the double. And Nafina have showed huge, huge character throughout the Dublin Championship. Obviously, they lost their opening game against Ballyboden quite heavily. Boden put a right number on them. And even I know the Boden manager yesterday even said, obviously, it was a bit of a man function, maybe more so on the Nafina side. But I'm sure Nafina will be just absolutely, you know, ready for this one. I'd say they have learned a lot. They've showed a huge amount of character throughout this championship as well. They've come from positions where they've been down in games by 8-10 points, even in the Ballymun game. They fought back to secure a victory, and then yesterday, obviously, beating Crokes as well at the death. They showed immense character there, and you know, they've been helped, I'd have to say, by the introduction and Keelan Sexton joining them, mm-hmm. from Clare. A good Clare man. So he's been huge addition to them, and you know, again, the character they showed, James Dorden popping up at the end to get that killer score. So it'll be a brilliant contest. It's really, really hard to call it. You'd nearly think, with the way it's lined up, that, you know, just the character, I think, and bit of steel that Nafina have shown might possibly put them in as going in as favourites, even though I know Boden have beaten the reigning All Ireland champions. But there'll be nothing in it. It'll be titanic.
A great one. I haven't seen too much of the club football championship. Are the new rules enhancing the club game as much as they are the county game?
Look, I've been out and about, I suppose, since I stepped out of coaching. I've been at games across Dublin, Mayo, Kildare, Meath, Galway, and I've watched a lot of really, really good fare. A lot of games that, you know, you'd have thought were maybe done and dusted, like even the weekend with Coola being 6 or 7 up going into the latter stages. Watched a couple of games like that where teams have dug out results in the last sort of, you know, 6 or 8 minutes. And I think a lot of it has come back to even the 2-point scores and, you know, the way the game has been freed up because of the results. So I think it's had, you know, the rule changes have had a really, really positive effect across the board, and I think it has enhanced the club game. And any of the games I've been at, there's been brilliant crowds turning out to see it, and I think that's largely dependent on the fare that's being put up. Now, I know there are obviously, you know, times in games where they've been affected by wind and teams have gone in at the break maybe 12 or 14 or 15 points up, and that maybe still is a bit of a problem within it. But I think by and large, the rule changes have been good, and obviously they've all got through there in Congress on Saturday as well. So I think even the, you know, if you go down to the granular and look at the four or five that have been sort of, you know, tweaked and changed, I think they'll add a little bit more to the whole thing again coming into the season ahead.
Even when read those tweaks and changes, they all were pretty much common sense, the few tweaks and changes they were making. But what about officiating at club games? It's all right, inter-county level, more officials, etc. Are they coping at club level, officiating with the new rules, the tree up and things like that?
Yeah, no, it is tough, and I know there's been instances where officials have been under pressure and they've got it wrong. Even more so in my own county in Mayo, there was a huge dispute in an intermediate group game where one team, you know, they were awarded a 2-pointer, and it's just literally the referee got it wrong. But I think, you know, if there were more officials, but club, like the club game is under a little bit of pressure from that, because obviously they don't have the numbers in that. And I think that is something that the GAA probably have to look at, even though, you know, that they have sort of brought in these suite of changes, that there has to be something else in terms of maybe putting an extra official or some mechanism that they can tweak to help or even, I would say, encourage maybe more people to get into officiating and reffing and that, to try and, you know, bolster their numbers.
Well, there you go. You're stepped away from coaching. It's a nice job for you.
There you go. That's yeah. That's one to think about.
Ruby would be great at it.
I'd say I would. Yeah. Yeah. you enjoy that career change, Austin. Let us know how it goes for you.
Yeah. Not just yet. Not just yet. I think. Yeah. There have a bit to go yet.
Yeah. Fair play to anyone who takes on that role. Austin O'Malley, thanks a million for coming in this evening. I will be back tomorrow evening with Shane Dawson from 6 p.m. as we talk European football with Mark Langdon and Paul Curry, plus the latest from the Formula One Championship with Declan Quigley. Up next here on 2FM is the new music show with Better De Silva. Thanks for tuning in, and enjoy the rest of your evening.
This is 2FM.